Welcome to another exciting podcast for Voltron fans all over the universe. Whether you're a new Voltron fan or you've been a fan since the 80s, Voltron is for everyone. You're listening to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, and this podcast is for every Voltron fan out there, including my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Oh man, this is definitely an episode for everyone, including me. Mark, it's great to be here as always. And wow, I have to tell you that just thinking about where we are, I think I tweeted today, you know, you pinch yourself and realize, wow, this new series is out there. People are loving it. And the podcast has been, in my humble opinion, a pretty exciting thing to listen to lately. This is a great time to be a fan and to hear this awesome episode that I think is coming up.
I think it's the excitement that everybody has from this new show that makes it even better to come to this podcast. Obviously, we've talked in the past about the original series, the Third Dimension, Voltron Force, every Voltron incarnation that's been out there. But this one has really, really, I think, hit a chord in a lot of people.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, you've already welcomed fans old and new to the podcast. I really want to tip the hat, so to speak, to the new folks in particular, because I myself have witnessed among the people that I know in my daily life, new people coming to Voltron, people who had never seen any prior show coming to the franchise and enjoying the living daylights out of it. And that's really what Voltron needs to grow and thrive and continue to defend the universe. This is just such an exciting time. I think I shared a story. I don't remember if I shared this on the podcast or not, but when I was at Walt Disney World, the very day after Voltron Legendary Defender hit Netflix, one of the people working at one of the restaurants at the Walt Disney World Magic Kingdom recognized a shirt that I was wearing, which was just a simple V logo on the new Voltron's chest. And he knew right off the bat, he was not a Voltron fan before, but knew what it was and really dug it. And seeing all these new people come to the show and hopefully seeing many of these folks come to our podcast is such an exciting, exciting time. So welcome to everyone, but especially welcome to all the new people.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned it ever to everyone, but I'm your host, Mark Morrell.
Sorry, Mark.
Yeah, I've been doing this show since December of 2013 and started it up with Jeremy Corey, who was working for World Events Productions at the time. It is the official Voltron podcast, and we want to give a warm welcome to all the people who attended Anime Expo 2016 this past weekend. There were tons of tweets and posts from the attendees, the artists, and the anime fans that shared their love of Voltron, and especially Voltron Legendary Defender. Everyone loves this show. Everyone.
It's amazing how broad the appeal seems to be.
We also know that there's an announcement that came out on Twitter and on Facebook that we shared on the official Facebook page for Let's Voltron. That's facebook.com/Let's Voltron podcast, and also on our Twitter account at Let's Voltron. We shared this preview poster of Bandai's Soul of Chogokin Voltron Go Lion.
Yes. How exciting is that?
It's finally back.
Yeah.
You know, is what they were saying. So what does that really mean, Greg?
Well, okay, let me give you a very, very brief and hopefully not boring history lesson. Bandai created the original Go Lion and Dairugger toys, which Matchbox imported in the mid-80s as the Voltron 1, 2, and 3, you know. So Dairugger, Go Lion, and Albegas. And ultimately, those became the most iconic Voltron toys during that time, and probably to this day. And in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years, I think, Bandai has been re-releasing many of its, or new versions of many of its classic toys, like Dairugger and Go Lion and all that. The Voltron-based robots have not gotten the same love to this point that the other classic robot designs that Bandai made has gotten. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, these properties are owned by World Events Productions at this point. So there's been a bit of a licensing issue there, seemingly. I'm not an expert on that. But in any case, it seems like within the last few years, Bandai had put together a prototype, and for various reasons, it is just now becoming getting revealed to fans. And I got to tell you, I am so stoked for this. It looks phenomenal from that preview poster.
Yeah, it was only a small tease, though. We haven't really seen anything yet,
Right,
but
right.
guess who's going to San Diego Comic-Con?
Who would that be, Mark Morrell?
Well, I am, of course, and my
Awesome.
wife. And of course, we're going to try to catch, anything Voltron that's happening. And, from what we've heard, this is going to be introduced at San Diego Comic-Con.
That is so cool.
So I'm looking forward to get as many, close-up pictures and everything that I can get so we can share them on the podcast and get as much information about it as we can at the time. Now, there's other things that we've seen out there. I think I saw a Voltron dress or something like that that is going to be introduced at San Diego Comic-Con. So I just wanted to let people know that, this new show, even though it's Voltron Legendary Defender, it doesn't mean that you can't still get brand new classic Voltron stuff.
Yep, absolutely.
Because, the license is still there to make classic Voltron as well. So this is where the Bandai stuff is coming from. This is where the dress is coming from. All this stuff is can still be made in the image of the classic Voltron.
Yes, what a fun time to be a fan.
Yes. So we're getting new Voltron Legendary Defender coming out, licensed merchandise that will be coming out. But as things come out, we will let you know first. Like Voltron Legendary Defender number one.
Form Voltron!
The Defender of the Universe is back in this galaxy-spanning new chapter of the Outer Space Saga, when five intrepid space explorers from Earth discover a giant robotic lion during a top-secret mission. They're thrown into a 10,000-year-old battle for the fate of the universe in the furthest reaches of outer space. Called to action by the noble Princess Allura to fight the evil Zarkon space monsters, these elite pilots bring their unique talents and specialized lions to create both an unstoppable team and a giant mecha known as Voltron, the legendary defender of the universe. All new tie-in stories from the Smash DreamWorks animated series on Netflix, Voltron Legendary Defender from Lion Forge Comics, is written by show writers Tim Hedrick and Mitch Iverson, with art by Digital Art Chefs, and it hits comic specialty store shelves on July 13th. Don't miss the riveting first issue of this monthly comic series. We were talking about how everyone loves this show, and of course, they love the voice actors that work for the show.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
Last week, we had Josh Keaton on. And Josh Keaton was amazing, and it got a great response from all the fans that listened to the episode. And they want more. So they love all the characters, including the villains. We have a guest on the show today who plays the biggest villain there is, Emperor Zarkon, who's been ruling the universe for 10,000 years.
That's quite a legacy.
The man who plays Zarkon is a voice actor who you've seen playing Optimus Prime in Transformers: Robots in Disguise. He was Diabolico in Power Rangers: Lightspeed Rescue, Hawkmon on Digimon, and he's also been on Naruto, and he's Tychus Finley of StarCraft II.
Hell, it's about time.
Everyone, please welcome Emperor Zarkon, the Lord Neil Kaplan.
Actually, it's Lord High Emperor, if you don't mind.
I mean, yes, sir.
What's going on?
How are you doing, Neil?
I'm all right. I'm a little fried from some holiday travel, but none the worse for wear. I'm glad to be here with you guys.
It's great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
So, of all the people that we've met at WonderCon, and you were one of them, we have noticed that you have probably used Twitter a lot more than the rest of them.
Well, that's because I probably have a lot more free time than the rest of them.
But when it comes to connecting with the fans, I think you're at the top of the list here.
I don't know. Josh keeps pretty busy and he interacts with the fans. And I write it and I say it and I mean it. I just try to treat people the way I'd want to be treated. And I think sometimes that if there was Twitter when I was younger, look, I know how I feel when Mark Hamill favorites one of my tweets, or, you know, Steve Van Zandt from the E Street Band when he responds to one of my tweets. And even a couple of weeks ago, I'm a big baseball fan, specifically the San Francisco Giants. And one of my favorite players from when I was a teenager was taking some questions, and he responded to my question. And I know how good that feels. And so it's like, well, why not turn around and give that to other people? It doesn't cost me anything. And if it makes somebody happy, or it makes their day, or it improves their experience of watching Voltron, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I've been involved with a lot of different franchises, but this one, we just seem to be hitting it off at the moment, so I'm enjoying it, and it seems like they're enjoying it as well.
We certainly are, and it's been really great to follow your tweets out there and to hear the person behind the Emperor, so this is cool.
The fan excitement, you can actually feel it coming from all these fans that are connecting with you on Twitter.
Well, look, yesterday I'm flying from New York to LAX. I'm on my bag. I have a couple of Voltron pins that I put on there. Before the show started, there was an art exhibit with a lot of original artwork done by artists who are involved with the show or artists who are fans of the show. And so they had a couple pins. I went down to the show along with Josh and Kimberly, Joaquim and Lauren. And it was great to see all the artwork, but I got a couple of pins and I put them on my bag. Yesterday, the TSA agent just looks at me and goes, "All right." And I'm thinking he's talking about my San Francisco Giants hat. And it's like, and I go, "What?" And he goes, "Voltron, man, watch that. I finished it yesterday. Oh, it was good." And I look at him and I go, "Dude, I'm Zarkon." It's like, "No way." So I pull up my Twitter profile where, you know, it's my picture in front of the logo. But so I show it to him, and, you know, I just kind of guess his age, and I go, "I'm going to make it worse for you." And they said, "I was also Optimus Prime." Nice. And so he just kind of stops for a second, and I said, "Yeah, and I was on Digimon and Power Rangers. Basically, I was your childhood. Now, can nice. I go through?" But the best part was he asked me what I'm sure other fans are already going to ask, because I saw the tweets. He asked about season 2, and I said, "Well, you understand there are some things I can't talk about." And he says, "Look, there are some things with my job I can't talk about. So, yeah, I understand."
The fans have been amazing, I think, just, you know, from our connections that we've had with the fans. And with the voice actors being so open, you know, to talk to the fans on Twitter and other social media, it's really cool. This is for Voltron fans who are used to not being able to connect with the people that made the show and stuff like that. This is like a dream come true for them.
I hope so. Some people have been working on this since 2014. You know, speaking for myself, I've had a great time working on it. I'm not just I don't want this to sound like a hair club commercial, but I'm not just a cast member. I'm also a fan. Nice. You know, I like the show. I love the writing. I love the score, the original score. I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm fans of all of I don't want to say pretty much. I'm fans of all of the actors on the show. And there are some guest stars that I had the opportunity to work with that I'm also a fan of. And I'm a fan of Joaquim and Lauren and Andrea Romano, and it's just like, it's, you know, it's like a kid in a fat free candy store.
Love it. I was telling was commenting in a previous podcast episode that Voltron has been around obviously over 30 years, but when Voltron Force came out about 5 years ago, it made me feel like an 8-year-old all over again. When this show came out, it didn't make me feel like an 8-year-old. It made me feel like I'm watching a more grown-up version of the story. And it's a unique and very cool feeling. And so I've become a fan of everyone. I've still not seen Airbender, The Last Avatar, or The Legend of Korra, but I have become a fan of those shows implicitly through what I've experienced watching this this new Voltron series. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, these folks sure know how to tell a story. It's one of the reasons why it was so much fun, quite frankly, to read the initial reaction of so many people who were upset that there wasn't a female paladin. And it's like, and how hard it was to read those and not react and not even say, just keep what, because there are some things you don't even react to, because if you react to it at all, you're tipping somebody off.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
The last thing because to be honest with you, I only saw scripts of episodes I was in, and Zarkon's not in that episode. And when I watched it, it was a blast for me.
Okay.
I'm watching the story unfold just like you guys did, and it's like
That's fun.
They did a really good job of bringing that out. That was really well done.
And it's one of those reasons why, you know, for the people who, and I'm not saying that anything's coming, please don't read into this.
Right.
I'm not saying anything other than Joaquin and Lauren know how to tell a story. And so if there is more story coming, I wouldn't try to prejudge it. And I wouldn't try to predetermine where it's going. And I certainly wouldn't pre-complain that it's not where I want it to be eventually. Because these two people know how to tell a story. And I'm speaking just as a fan of storytelling, a fan of animation, a fan of science fiction. But with what they've done so far, they've earned my trust as an audience. As far as, you know, I don't feel like I need to tell them where it needs to go. I think if there's more to come, I think the story is in good hands.
I have to tell you, I've been a proponent of encouraging longtime fans to, you know, check their preconceptions at the door and just enjoy this show on its own merits. And if somebody, you know, they check it out and if they walk away and say, this was really awesome, great. And if they happen to genuinely walk away and say, this wasn't my cup of tea, but if they give it a fair shot and don't judge it by what they remember from childhood, then that's the way you ought to approach it, you know?
Look, everybody views it through their own prism, and that's fine.
Right.
I grew up a fan of Star Trek, the original series.
Same here.
And when I was 12, I went to, and I don't have a problem talking about my age. It's all over the internet, boys. So when I was 12, Star Trek the Motion Picture came out, and I was one of those kids that actually wrote letters to Paramount saying, hey, Star Wars was nice, but where's Star Trek? We need something. And, you know, when I went to go see the movie, and now all of a sudden, instead of the leather boots and velour shirts, they're wearing Dr. Dentons. For those of you who don't understand, that's footy pajamas.
Oh, I very much know Star Trek, so I get all these references.
Well, but some of the youngsters out there might hear Dr. Denton's and be scared. Something like that. So, you know, but it was not only that, but it's like the movie starts off with the what's this crazy music? What is this? And then the transporter beam looks different. And it's like, how dare you? And of course, as we all have come to know, they scrapped the costumes for something else in the next movie, but they stayed with the new ship design, which ultimately was great. Oh, yeah. And the Jerry Goldsmith theme, most people recognize as the theme for 7 years to Next Generation because it was so incredibly good.
Yep.
So it's like, but at a certain point, I'm watching this movie doing what I don't want it to be doing. And then it hits me. It's not my story to tell. And I can either sit here and complain all I want, you know, but it's not going to change. They're not going to change the movie. They're not going to take away the movie and replace it with something else. You know, this is the movie. I can either enjoy it or not. And that's what happened when I saw Phantom Menace. And that's... And that's what's going to happen, you know, every time they want to give us a new X-Men or whatever. And we can either find something to enjoy about it, or we can, you know, look, life's too short to just find something and not like it just because it's not what you wanted it to be. I don't know.
This is why we're so glad that they haven't just thrown a Voltron movie out there just to please the fans.
Right.
When it comes, it's going to be something we waited for and we were patient for because it's going to be a great story.
That's what we should, as fans, hope for. You know, take your time, get it right.
Right.
And certainly with this reboot, thanks to Lauren and Joaquin, I think it's really in a strong upswing. And hey, at this point, I don't know, I kind of like the idea of an animated movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, just like Transformers had an animated movie back in 86.
I seem to remember something about that, yes.
Yes. Till all are one. I got to tell you, Neil, before we jump into our formal Voltron questions, I noticed in your list of credits, you were the voice of Johnny Bravo in a computer game. How in the world did that come about?
They basically called me. They needed somebody to play a couple of Cartoon Network characters. So, you know, the director who was working on it kind of thought that I could do that and, you know, Grimm from Billy and Mandy and Aku, you know. Mako had passed away at that point. So that was probably the most fun was, you know, stepping into his big shoes.
Nice.
Can we go back a ways and go to the beginning of your voice acting career and how you got it started?
Oh, we can try. Or as Reverend Jim would say, hey, honky-donk.
So where did you get your start as a voice actor?
I basically have always kind of played around with my voice. I was the kid in school who did impressions, but my first real job was in New York City, actually 30 years ago, doing celebrity voice drop-ins for an oldies radio show on CBS-FM called The Don Shannon Show.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was like, thanks for listening to CBS-FM this afternoon. Whenever you listen to the oldies, you know, it's a wonderful life. All those kind of like cheesy things and whatever.
Okay.
Great stuff. Love it.
So when did you get into animation or video games or anything like that?
Let's see. My first video game work, it's actually a really popular game, and it was back when they would actually make you memorize the script. So let me see if I can remember some of it for you. I think it went something like this. I think it was boop, boop, beep, beep, boop, boop, beep, 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 boop.
That's not Pong, is it?
Oh, thank you. I love it when people recognize my work. Wow.
Oh, I did recognize that. It was wonderful.
I'm humbled. I really, wow. You are quite the super fan.
Wow.
There's going to be somebody out there who's going to go to work tomorrow with a very heavy limp because they don't realize how hard I'm pulling their leg, right? Right? There's going to be somebody who's going, no, seriously, he was. I heard it, man. Neil wouldn't lie to us.
He was the voice of Pong.
Wow.
Yes, that was I. I did local commercials up when I was living in the Bay Area for a couple of years, and then I moved back down here to LA. And believe it or not, there was an ad in the Actor's paper. I think it was Dramalog back then, looking for voices for background voices for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Ah, cool.
And so I answered the ad, and that's kind of where everything started.
The background voices, what kinds of voices would they do?
You know, it was whenever they would have like the villains that would have to, the henchmen who would have to fight the Power Rangers every week. It's like, for instance, I remember like about a year and a half ago, I was flipping around the channels and one of the HBO channels was showing Mighty Morphin Power Ranger movie. And I'm watching it for a couple of minutes, you know, I'm watching the kids and I'm going, oh, you know, that would have been fun to work on. And then, you know, the main villain on that was Ivan Ooze.
Yep.
And he was this purple guy. And so he had these purple monsters that would fight for him because, you know, as you know, the main villain doesn't. We don't waste our time on that. Come on now. That's what,
until
that's
Zarkon.
That's what the red shirts are for. That's why people invented flesh props. You know, come on. I'm watching this movie and I'm going, oh, this would have been nice to have worked on. And the Oozlings start fighting the Power Rangers. And suddenly I hear, you know, because, you know, you had to have they exploded when they would run into something. So it was like, you know, you hit the wall. And it was me. And I go, oh, that's right. I did work on this. Oh, that was fun to work on this movie. Oh, yeah.
Very memorable.
Exactly.
Just so you know, as Zarkon, yes. You have already said, this quintessence gives me so much power, I could fight the paladins myself.
Right.
No red shirts for you.
You never actually go through with it, but you just say you could.
Well, sure. I could. Hello. If push comes to shove, Andy, I could take them.
So, what were some of your favorite shows that you worked on early on?
One of my favorites was something that you might be able to find on YouTube. It was called The Mouse and the Monster. That one was we had a good time with that. I was like the utility guy on that show. I played whatever they needed me to play. Stomachs, ghosts, monsters, birthday clowns, an evil former birthday clown turned pirate who still wore the birthday clown makeup.
Okay.
Complex character, let me tell you.
No doubt.
And of course, Digimon was a blast. You know, I mean, I was on season 2 as Hawkmon. You know, that's where people, you know, I guess first became exposed to my voice, I suppose, or one of my voices, as it were. I played Hawkmon, and then all of his derivations. You know, everything turned into. People ask, they come up to me and they say, "Did you play Poromon in the first season?" And I say, "Oh, please, that puffy, round, pink thing that never said a word? Why would I waste my time?"
You know, I couldn't. I remember watching Digimon its first couple years, and when I saw Hawkmon on your list of credits, I didn't remember the name. I'm not that much of a fan, but when I heard your voice, it all came back. So that's wow, very memorable voice. Love it.
Yeah, he kind of was, and you know, one of the first derivation he turned into, Halsamon, had. I don't usually remember a lot of lines because. You know, you walk in, you read it off a sheet of paper, you walk out. It doesn't really necessarily stick that much. But Some of these guys have call-outs that they say again and again. And Halsamon had this one weapon that I still don't know how it's a weapon. And I wish that the show had been on in the 70s because it would have been perfect. But it was the late 90s and it was just really strange saying, "Halsamon, wings of love." It's like, what does that even mean? How do you attack with that? It's just wings of love. It's just so strange. It grabbed onto my brain and hasn't let go.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, 20 years down the road at a convention, one of the fans will come up to you and say that.
You know, I think that's what happened was like one of these buried traumatic memories. And a fan actually did come up and mentioned it. It's like, oh, right. You know, because no, it's weird because I actually had a fan who helped me remember how I came up with the voice of Hawkmon. Because I guess they had heard the story and I had kind of forgotten about it. And essentially it was based on the old Tootsie Roll owl commercial.
Yes.
I just took it a little further and made him British. You know? "Mr. Owl, how many licks does it take to get this center of a Tootsie Roll, Tootsie Bob?" "I don't know. Let's see. One, two, three." "Three." And then, you know, the SOB hands back this empty stick. It's like, you trickster. You Songana Michiki. You know, for those of you who have seen Johnny Dangerously. Yes, me and pop culture references. We're like that.
My mother saw Johnny Dangerously
once. I nicely done, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
Moving forward from there, what was your biggest role after Hawkmon?
Pretty much simultaneously, I was doing Lightspeed Rescue, which was kind of fun because that gave me an action figure, really. Ooh. For the first time. I mean, look, Hawkmon had dolls, but he wasn't an action figure. There wasn't much. I mean, it's Hawkmon, you know, what are you going to do? He's not an action right. figure. He's a critical figure. You can put him on your shelf and he'll sit there and go, really? That's what you're going to wear? Oh, fine. It's not me, it's you, but if you feel comfortable, go right ahead. Nice. You know, not really much of an action figure. But, you know, Diabolico was. And Diabolico kind of bridged the gap between Digimon the second season and Transformers, which was an interesting experience for a couple of years. Unfortunately, we only got the opportunity to voice one season. But we did get the best title. You know, we got Robots in Disguise, or at this point, the original Transformers, Robots in Disguise, if you don't mind.
Right.
You know, they ran out of names, so they said, hey, let's use this one again. Okay.
Yeah.
You know. So we're either original or O1, whatever you want to call it.
It sounds better than Robots in Leisure Suits. I mean,
I don't know. At this point, I would go see that.
Okay, you become the new incarnation of Optimus Prime. What's that like? I mean, is it just another role, or is it, oh my gosh, there's a massive precedent for this role?
That was my first time really being exposed to fandoms that care, you know, and get really involved. I mean, look, early 2001, the internet was a completely different place, and there were plenty of message boards with people who were rather concerned because I guess the cast had been leaked out, and so people looked at my credits and kind of figured that,
well, everything I do must sound like this. So they were terrified that this was going to be the new Optimus Prime. Who knew? They were terrified they were going to get stories like, all right, let us go hunt the Decepticons, yes? What, what? All right. Very good. Look here. I shall take you down, Megatron! Fossil! It is my imperative to destroy you and all the other evil Decepticons! Ooh! And Constructicons, too!
So, anyway, it was interesting because, you know, we're still working on the show and I do my first convention. And I went down and met some very nice fans, and at a certain point, because one or two episodes had aired, but somebody asked during a Q&A panel, during a Q&A with me, no panel, it was just me. But they asked, are we ever going to hear you say roll out? And I just, this will tell you how much of a non-fan I was at the time. I said, is that important?
Oh, boy.
There you go. And the room reacted like that. And so I got the cue and I said, here's the thing. It's an anime, so I can only do so much because I got to fit the dialogue in the lip flaps.
Right.
But here's something that you guys may not remember. Optimus Prime had a face mask. And so yes, I said, in this case, I don't have any lip flaps to match, and I don't have any lip flaps to worry about. So from this point forward, I will guarantee you that every single episode that I work on, I will make sure it is in. So if you go back and you watch the show, if it does not have a rollout in that episode, it's one of the first few episodes. But okay. pretty much after like the first, I don't know, four or five, every single one after that has it. And it's because of the fans.
Okay. We're going to get to the meat and potatoes of this now.
Ruh-roh!
So we're talking about Voltron.
Okay.
And, of course, you weren't the first person to play Zarkon.
No, I'm not.
Did you actually know Jack Angel's role as Zarkon before you played Zarkon?
I didn't know his work on it, but I do know Jack.
Okay.
You know, and Jack's certainly one of my favorite people here in town. You know, it was interesting having to keep that information quiet and not share that with him, you know, much as I wanted to.
Right.
I feel certainly an honor and a privilege to follow in his footsteps. You know, at this point, I still haven't even met Peter Cullen, so it's nice to follow up on an actor that I do know and I do really respect.
That's cool. How did you actually go through the process of getting the Zarkon role?
I got an audition from my agent. It had a picture of the character. It had a description of the character. It had a scene or two from the show. They said they didn't want anything, you know, from the old show. Don't go and don't give us anything. You know, we want your interpretation of what we're presenting you. We want your interpretation of what this guy would sound like, the guy who looks like this, and here's the description. So what does this guy sound like? You know, we're not interested in reproducing what was done before. This is our character and we want a voice for this. So, I didn't listen to any of the previous stuff, and I pretty much just laid down a couple of tracks and forgot about it. And then a few months later, I got a call from my agent and they asked me to participate with this show. And I thought, sounds like fun to me.
Okay.
And then I went and met everybody, and then I got a much better idea of how much fun it was going to be.
What gave you the first impression?
Of meeting the team, seeing the rest of the cast. Yeah.
Did you know much about the earlier works of Dos Santos and Montgomery, what they had worked on before, or?
I knew that it was critically lauded. I knew that the episodes that I had seen, I had enjoyed. So I was really intrigued by not only the studio that they had worked with before. I didn't know that they were going to work with them again. But I was, those were two of the better looking animated shows that have been on the air in the last, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, look, cause there's some great TV that's been on, for a while, and we can't watch everything. So I had caught a few episodes, but I wasn't a devoted watcher, but I knew again that they knew how to tell a story, you know, both on an episodic level, but also from my friends and colleagues who were fans of the original show, and also friends of mine who are animation fans who love the show, and basically, well, if they like it, I trust these people's opinion. Obviously, these were good shows.
Right. Back when we were kids, we only had like 6 channels, so we were able to watch everything.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly. I don't know, when something's on ABC and something's on NBC, you still got to pick and choose. But yeah, you know, yeah. I get you.
Well, but that's right. But that was also part of it, is we had to do that, you know, in the days before the VCR, you know.
Yeah.
And it's funny how people like to say that TV is this wasteland, and it really isn't. There is so much stuff. It's spread across a lot of different platforms at this point in time,
right?
Whether it's, you know, some of the fantastic stuff, the Netflix originals, or obviously HBO, or any one of the cable channels, you know, your basic cable channels, or even the networks. Everybody's got a couple of good shows. And when you multiply that by 100 different outlets, it's like even a slave to TV like me only has so much time every day, you know?
But how many of those shows actually appeal to everyone of every age?
Well, you know, first of all, nothing appeals to everyone. And so you just have to get over that idea. And I think when, I think when people do, they allow themselves more creative freedom.
Right.
As opposed to how are we going to please everybody? Well, you're not. So let it go and don't worry about it.
Right. But that's what the $500 million motion pictures are for, to please everyone.
but even they don't.
Right. It's true.
Statistically, I can prove to you that the most popular films of all time actually didn't sell tickets to a higher percentage of the world population than they did sell tickets to. And a lot of those that have made a lot of money, well, many of us were repeat ticket buyers. So an even greater percentage of the world population didn't see it. So it was actually technically more unpopular than it was popular. So
good point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but here's the thing. I got to tell you, it's given me a real great feeling to see, because this is what you were alluding to. I mean, being a part of Voltron, where it's like, you know, I'm having my 55-year-old brother and my 55-year-old brother-in-law watching this thing. They never watched Voltron before, but they're watching this one now, and they're digging it. And their sons are digging it, and their, you know, and then grandchildren are watching it and digging it, and people of all shapes, sizes, creeds, colors, religions. I mean, it's cutting through to a lot of different people, and from that standpoint, this certainly feels really good, because I haven't had a lot of things that I've been involved with where somebody is tweeting about, I was watching it for myself, but now my kid's hooked on it. Or I turned it on for my kid because I thought he'd like it, because I did when I was growing up, and man, I like it too. And look over here, my wife's watching along with us.
Right.
You know, I mean,
that is very unique.
Yes.
Yeah. And it is pretty special. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm really kind of getting involved with the fans, because it does cut across so many different lines, you know?
Right. As far as Zarkon goes, okay, he's the type of thing that you'll see, you know, a couple times an episode, and he says a few lines, but he really doesn't get a long soliloquy or anything like that, does he?
Certainly doesn't seem that way, does it? But that's all right.
He's a man of few words.
But yeah. What awesome words they are.
Yes.
It's one of those things that as an actor you kind of learn to appreciate. I mean, look, I'm not just an actor, I'm a fan. And so that means I grew up watching Margaret Hamilton and The Wizard of Oz. Margaret Hamilton's in like 11 minutes of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, Charles Durning, I think, was nominated for two Oscars for two films that he worked on a total of 2 days.
Wow.
To Be or Not to Be and Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Right.
But it's just, I mean, it shows you the power of, you know, being impactful, but maybe not having a lot of screen time. They write it well. Look, it's somewhat akin to the StarCraft trailer that was out a couple of years ago. It's this 2.5-minute trailer, and it's got all this great music, and it builds, and it's exciting, and it really gets your heart pumping, and it leads up to the very last moment where the Marine's face mask pops up, and he's chomping on his cigar, and the smoke comes out, and he says, "Hell, it's about time." And people just go, "Wah!" And it's like, yeah, I mean, what am I going to sit there? I'm going to say, "Well, you guys could have had me doing more dialogue." It's like, shut up! It's great storytelling, and it builds to you. And it's like, you know, and this is the same kind of thing. It's like a huge, powerful, you know, robot lion robot thing that can, you know, like destroy galaxies and rule the entire universe, you know, or whatever. And it's like, and everybody's going, yeah, but keep it out of Zarkon's hands. It's like, exactly. The Zarkon guy must be pretty important. Everybody's talking about him.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's good if everybody's talking about you.
Well, at the end of this season that we just watched.
Yes.
One of the characters that everyone wants to know more about is now Zarkon.
I think everybody wants to know more about all of the characters, especially the space mice.
Well,
what is up with the space mice?
Yeah, how can they talk to people?
You know, 10,000 years, a lot of time to study.
Yep,
and that's the truth.
You give me 10,000 years, I could probably speak mouse.
You figure it out, won't you?
Especially if you're stuck in a tube.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, of course they're going to figure it out. Come on, it's natural.
So what do you think some of the biggest questions the fans have over who Zarkon really is?
Wait, are you trying to get me to guess their questions?
No, I'm trying to get you to tell us what some of the fans have already been talking to you about on Twitter and stuff like that. you know, about your character?
They really don't talk to me much about the character other than to say, I hate you. You know, why are you being so mean to Pidge? You know, or why are you giving my boyfriend Lance a hard time? Or why are you mean to Shiro? You know, or cut Keith some slack. The only one that they don't ask about, they never say anything about Karan. They never, but like, you know, I guess the two of us are so far away from each other, we just don't interact.
Wow. I just want to know what it's like if you and Reese ever get together.
He's hilarious. When he's in the room, I usually just shut up. You know, it's like he's a human Tasmanian devil in a good way. And you just kind of stand back and let him go.
Okay.
That's funny.
Yeah. You know, it's tough when you're, you know, sometimes when you're working with people who you like and admire and you're a fan of, because it's like, please go ahead.
I want to know what Zarkon looks like underneath the helmet. You know, he's got that thing on all the time. What's going on? I want to know what the rest of the design looks like. You know, is it got antennae or I don't know, some, you know, five arms sticking out of his head? What's going on?
That would be something you'd have to talk to somebody on the design team about. I can neither confirm nor deny. You know, yeah, I'd love to tell you he had really cool dreads, or maybe like a nice kind of fade or an afro or something, or you know, maybe like when I was young, maybe like a Jufro or something. But no, it's protected by NDA, guys. I just can't go there.
Nice.
We do have a lot of fan questions here that we need to get through.
Okay. And I've seen them on Twitter, and I've steered clear of answering any of them, and it's been tough.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
You really want to satisfy people in real time, don't you?
I do. I'm a people pleaser.
Right. I'm going to start with some of the Facebook questions.
All right. Oh, I haven't seen those.
Yes. We have Megan Whidden. She says, I understand there was a petition to get Jack Angel to reprise his role as Zarkon for the new series. And what is it like to follow such a legendary voice actor in such an iconic role? Now, you had talked about this previously, but did you know there was a petition?
I actually got a link to it, and I didn't answer it because, you know, there was a reason I wasn't going to sign it. I love Jack, but, you know.
You kind of wanted the role, huh?
Yeah, paychecks were nice, too.
I kind of wanted to keep the role. I liked working. I liked working with that team, and, you know, I guess I'm selfish that way.
Zajan DeMonkey says, this has been bugging me ever since I saw the last episode. It seems like Zarkon is infused with enough quintessence to power a small star, and he's had 10,000 years to ponder the Galran equivalent of Sun Tzu's Arts of War. How come he hasn't won already?
You assume that this happens after Sun Tzu's written the Art of War. Sometimes in science fiction, you know, there are different levels and parameters which induces a certain temporal paralysis for which we cannot have necessary... What the heck kind of question is that? Are you kidding me? If he had, there would be no show. Why hasn't Zarkon won already? Because we want to see the adventures of the paladins, and it wouldn't be... I mean, what? If Zarkon had won, would you guys really be happy with the Zarkon Variety Hour?
No.
But I just think, you know, wait, why do you want the end before the beginning? We're in the middle of another thing here, and you want it to already be over? Man.
Well, the most powerful weapon in the universe has still eluded him, so.
There is that. Yeah. It's a big universe! I think that's the thing that people should be taking away from this, is that Neil deGrasse Tyson and Carl Sagan are right. It's a big, giant universe, and even 10,000 years isn't enough to find it.
That's right.
That's true. Thank you.
It's more a lesson on the cosmos and the pondering thereof.
Thank you for looking at this scientifically, you know.
Exactly. Hello.
That's always what we're doing when we watch cartoons.
Exactly.
Okay. Tally LaFlamme asks, are there any historical villains or tyrants that you are inspired by for your inspiration for Zarkon?
Tommy Lasorda. Well, either Tommy Lasorda or Jabba the Hutt, because I can't tell them apart sometimes.
Oh, jeez.
Is this coming from a Giants fan's perspective?
No. This is, I'm being thoroughly neutral on this.
I was going to say, is this before or after Lasorda's Slim Fast commercials from way back when?
I kind of go with pre and post, because back then, of course, he had those wonderful sideburns, don't you know? If I'm inspired by anything, I'm more inspired by the actors who played some villains. I'm inspired by the Cyril Richards and Ray Milans and a lot of the great actors from the 60s and 70s, I would think. You know, and even before that, a lot of these actors who had just these rich, wonderful, exciting voices to listen to, the Yul Brynners. So not really the real villains, because I think nowadays, especially when it comes to telling stories to a wider audience, I think they connect more to not the truth of history, but what they've been led to believe is history. Not real human voices, but the voices they've heard on TV and movies. People can't understand a real Scottish dialect, but they can understand a Scottish dialect that's done by an actor who doesn't really speak with a Scottish dialect. You know? Wow. So I think I'm more influenced by actors who have played villains than actual villains.
That's fair.
All right, Tara Scully asks, do you think Zarkon was able to take over Voltron, causing him to split because of Shiro's Galra tech arm, since it seems powered by quintessence as well, and having Black Lion spit out Shiro? And also, thank you for being so open to the fans.
Well, it's my pleasure. I really am having a good time with the fans. And as far as that spoiler regarding, Shiro's arm and the Galra tech, and it's really funny because, and you know, you guys just make sure you keep that between us, all right?
Okay, you got it.
All right.
Boy, oh boy, I can't believe you revealed that on this show.
Yeah,
oh
my goodness. Yeah, but just for you guys.
Wow.
Okay. Jeremy Sparks asks, which episode was your favorite to record for season one of Legendary Defender?
My favorite was probably one of the first two, because we actually had the cast together to read those. For my own personal reasons, I mean, after we kind of got into a flow, things would break up and, you know, like the Paladins would tend to read with each other and I would come in and I would read with Kree or with a couple of the other villains, or if there was a small interaction with Josh, you know. But for the most part, the first couple episodes is really where we kind of set our pace and everybody, or as many people as possible, work together. And for me, those are my favorites. You know, it had nothing to do with what I was doing with my character. It had more to do with what I was doing, being involved with that team. You know, to liken it to baseball, it's like I was involved with a no-hitter on those couple of days. Even though I didn't get a hit and even though I didn't make any plays in the field, I was part of that team, and that's what made that so special.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, we're switching over to Twitter questions now.
Okay.
So you might have seen some of these, but some of these you might not have seen, because some of them sent direct messages to me.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so my Laurie wants to say first a heartfelt thank for being so great with the fans. Your interactions, both in character and out, create a really fun way to feel connected to the show and the characters.
Mission accomplished. Phew!
Yes. We already answered the question about how did you get into voice acting. But we'll do this other question. Did you audition for the role of Zarkon from the start, or did you try for one of the other characters instead?
I don't recall reading for any of the other characters. I might have, but it's when we read for something, you know, we do it in our agent's office, or we might do it from our own home studio, and you read and you throw it out there to the universe and cross your fingers for a half a millisecond, and then you move on.
Uh-huh.
You
don't feel rejection, right?
If you did, you'd never get out of bed in the morning.
Right.
Oh, sure. Right.
And it's not about rejection. It's just that they selected somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing on camera work, they reject you. And that's one of the big things about it is you're too tall, you're too thin, you're too fat, you're too short, you're too ethnic, you're not ethnic enough. You look too much like the lead. You don't look enough like the lead. You know, there's so many different things that are reasons why you don't even get a chance to read for something on camera. And then voiceover, it's pretty much they just listen, and it's just like, and then they hear the one and go, that's it. That's the guy. That's our character. That's who I've been hearing in my head when I've been writing this. You know, or they pick a couple people that's what they feel about, and they'll have callbacks sometimes. But like, for instance, several of the paladins had callbacks first. And I my understanding is even did some test recordings. But with me, I guess they had finally gotten their paladins together and said, yeah, I think this guy would play well in the sandbox. And they chose me. And, you know, I don't know how complicated the decision making was. And when somebody asks you to be on your team, you don't turn around and say, could you take the time and the energy and tell me why? You just got to go, thank you. And you jump on board the hot moving train, you know?
Makes sense.
Right. Okay. Cheetoy asks, would you be willing to join us at New York Comic Con for a Voltron party?
Oh, I've already said, if you guys can get me a table, because they, as far as I know, they're kind of full at the moment. But I think if enough fans tweet at New York Comic Con, politely, please.
Politely. Yeah.
You know, or write them a note on Facebook. Maybe they'll find an open table, or they'll extend an invitation. At this point, I have family out there, and it's right around my wife's and my anniversary, and she's from New York, so we would have a good time being out there around that time of year. I'd love to be there, and certainly if the Voltron fans help make that happen, you better believe I'll be available for a beverage.
Okay. All right, that sounds great. Kitty Lynn, the original KL, asks, do you think Zarkon has any honor?
Yeah, every villain has honor. Right. The only difference is that we don't agree with what they honor, or we don't agree with the direction that that's in. I mean, if you think about it this way, if he had no honor, do you think any of those thousands of troops would follow him?
No.
I mean, he's an emperor. He's not, and this is where, you know, please don't, you know, don't get insulted, but a king is in charge of a kingdom, a tiny little place. All right. That's why he's not King Zarkon anymore. And that's why every now and then I get a little annoyed when people call him King Zarkon. That's the other guy. This is Emperor Zarkon, and he's in charge of a very large area of space. And he wouldn't be in charge of a large area of space or a large body, a large fleet of ships, if he didn't have honor and he didn't have the respect of, okay, so maybe fear is involved, sure. But, you know, sometimes we need a little bit of that to keep everybody in line. But if there were no honor, I don't think there would be any order.
Yes, agreed.
You know, it's like to discuss a book that I read and a TV series that I watch, but we may not agree with Negan, but Negan lays out his rules. And if you follow the rules, he honors that, and he leaves you alone, and he appreciates the fact that you're doing everything you're supposed to do. It's when you don't honor his rules that you meet Lucille.
Right.
All right. And I think it's kind of the same place here. Of course he has honor. You know, it's you humans just don't appreciate it.
Makes sense.
Okay, the next question comes from that bum of an artist. Does Zarkon like chess? If so, does he play with Hagar?
I would have to think that he plays a version of chess, whether it's a version that we on 20th century Earth would recognize or not. I think he is a tactician and would certainly appreciate an activity like that. I would say, to put it simply for this person, yes.
Okay.
One thing I'm curious about with Zarkon is, what does he do when he's not standing around planning, you know, to recapture Voltron? I mean, have you gotten any sort of an inkling from when you've learned about the character as to what he does in his spare time? I mean, I don't mean like necessarily kick back and watch American Idol or something, but, you know.
He wouldn't waste his time on drivel like that. now, Top Chef. Or maybe Chopped, you know?
All right, Cheyenne the non-human asks, does Zarkon secretly have a favorite meme?
Zarkon is beyond memes, which of course is a meme in and of itself, and please feel free to go ahead and create that. So,
okay.
I realized that as soon as I was saying that, it's like, somebody's going to do that, so it's like, please don't stand in its way.
And Tony Federico says, how's that second season of recording coming?
Wow, I'm sorry. The connection kind of broke up there. What was that?
He was kind of asking that in hope that you guys might know when the second season was coming.
Yeah.
Didn't you get that from that spoiler he shared with us a while ago?
Yeah.
Look, at this point in time, there are two things that I would say. First of all, when I saw The Empire Strikes Back, when it opened up, my mother actually let me cut school and go to opening day. And I came back, and she asked me what happened in the movie. And I said, I'm not going to tell you. And she said, you're either going to tell me or you're grounded. And I said, all right, ground me. And she did. I mean, even before we call them spoilers, I don't spoil things. You know, I was involved in a game called StarCraft II, which had ended up, as everybody knew it was going to, it was a three-part story. And, you know, spoiler alert for a game that's been out for 6 years, my character died in the first chapter. And so people would ask me, are you in the next one? How do you feel about, you know, him coming back for the next one? Or that question, how's recording going for the next one? And I wouldn't say a thing. And I actually wasn't even under a legal non-disclosure agreement at that point in time. It's just I have too much respect for the audience. I also have too much respect for the creative team to ever spoil anything. I'm not going to say if we are. I'm not going to say if we aren't. I'm not going to say if we have or if we haven't. I'm not going to say if we will or if we won't. I mean, I'm not going to say anything other than there's a great season on Netflix. Enjoy it. If you've seen it once, watch it again. There are Easter eggs that I'll guarantee you missed. All right?
Right.
But as far as anything beyond that, I'm not going to discuss it because I don't want to tip it one way or the other. If I say that there isn't one, it's going to shade how people view what they've got right now. And if I say that there is more, it's going to shade it a different way. Or people are going to not watch it, they're going to spend more time and energy speculating on what's to come. Or if I say that there isn't, they'll wonder why there isn't more to come. It's like, right. I'm not saying anything. Just take what you've got at the moment, enjoy it, and when and if there's news, hopefully you'll either be happier than me or I'll be happier than you.
And that's what we're doing here on Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. We're bringing you guys in so we can enjoy what we have so far on, you know, Voltron Legendary Defender.
Exactly. At this point, let's speculate on, are we getting cool toys? What's coming? You know?
Yes.
That's the fun part that we can start playing around with.
Are you going to buy a Zarkon action figure?
If there is one, I better not have to buy it. Will I put one on display in my home? Sure. Will I be happy if when I receive it? Sure. Will I buy it? Oh, come on, man. I have to buy it?
Okay. The next question comes from King of Comics RC.
All right.
When does Lotor show up, and who do you want to voice him?
You know, that question's going to fall under the previous answer.
Okay. All right.
Although I am hoping that if Lotor does show up in this show, I'm hoping they will use his full name.
Is that Imperial Prince Lotor?
No, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
What kind of a... Holy... Right,
I was thinking Bartholomew, you know, from Spaceballs, but anyway.
Right. No, every time I see that name, my brain jumps over. Why are they asking about Lord of the Rings?
Right. Okay. Cryoflight asks, the Emperor seems pretty mellow for an evil intergalactic tyrant.
Yeah.
What would it take to get him rattled?
Losing control of a certain amount of Galra's space, I suppose. You know, there's a strength when you know you're in charge, when it's not in question. It's like, you know, a lot of the good villains, a lot of our favorite villains don't have to yell, you know?
That's right.
It's like, what was the agent's name in The Matrix? Did he ever raise his voice?
Agent Smith.
Yeah, yes. Did Smith ever raise his voice once? No.
No.
He didn't have to. You know, Darth Vader. Vader. When was the weakest moment in Darth Vader's entire existence? No.
Right.
All right. Otherwise, he was this powerful guy that never had to yell. The more mellow the villain, the scarier they are.
Absolutely.
That's right. That's right. Legendary Nerd asks, are there any humorous incidents that occurred while voicing Zarkon?
You know, every now and then you just see a line and it strikes something in your head and you'll read it a different way. But nothing that I can really remember. And most of the fun stuff wasn't... You know, it was just based on the people that I was working with, whether I was working that day with Ty or I was working that day with Cree. We make each other laugh. They're really good people and they're really talented.
Cool.
You know, so most of the fun stuff are memories like that.
Okay. Chitsu with Dead Leg says you absolutely execute Zarkon magnificently.
No, I like that. Wait. Let me see.
Take it all in.
I like the way you think. Please continue.
My question is, do you have to prepare your voice in order to do Zarkon?
Nope. It's just, I guess the way I grew up, I felt like I had to be able to do as much as possible. So I've always kind of toyed with dialects. I've always worked on expanding my range to make the bottom part lower and the top part higher, you know. That's just some place where I can go. I usually tend to, it's called eat the mic, where I'm right on top of the microphone. It's not something that I would do in a theatrical play. It's not a voice that I can project, but it certainly is part of my range, and I go there quite easily. You know, so it's just, it's what I do.
Okay. Angel or Ride Orty Studio says, do you use a villainous voice in casual conversation outside of recordings, and could you say something silly in it for us?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll do that sometimes. Let's see, something silly. You know, I hate when there's that pressure on you because, like, no, that's not really silly, I suppose. So I guess... I'm a little teapot short and stout. Here is my handle. Here is my spout. When you hear me whistle, tip me over and pour me out. I guess that'll have to do. I'm a little teapot. Thank you.
Yay.
Okay. Sean Montgomery asks, it seems like you're pretty good buddies with Cree Summer. Do you have a funny story you can share from recording with her?
You know, I'd like to think we're good buddies, but, you know, the fact of it is she is just such a warm and wonderful person that I think she's just buddies with everybody and everybody's buddies with her. You know, it sounds so Hollywood sometimes when you sit there and go, as talented as she is, she's a better person. But really, she is. And I think one of the most magnificent things about her is... with all of the people she knows and all of the projects she works on and all of the stuff that she's done, when she's with you, she's present and she pays attention and she listens and she's there with you instead of being off somewhere else and thinking of other things, and just a very supportive person. And, you know, with all her years of experience. And I mean, this is my first big original animated series. So even though I've done hundreds of video games and I've done anime and I've done audiobooks and I've done narration and I've done trailers and I've done promo, you know, I still have the opportunity to sit and do my work and learn, and to watch her work from so up close has been a joy and a gift, and has given me the opportunity to learn about my own craft even more, to learn about my own technique even more, and, you know, to get better and feel more confident about what I do. You know, as artists, we're always continuing to grow. Don't let anybody tell you that, you know, that we stop. If we do it right, we're always growing and we're always getting better. And I think that's one of the reasons that I feel so blessed to have been involved with this show, because I really feel like it's helped me, you know, learn about things that I already do, you know, kind of put a finger on it and go, oh, that's what I'm doing. Oh, that's what's going on. All right, I got it. I get it. And under the wonderful ear of Andrea Romano, to have her really pick up on these minute things and, you know, telling me at times, pull it back, give me less. And it's essentially her way of telling me, be more confident in your power and as the villain, as Zarkon, and have less of a need to foist it on someone, to fool someone into believing your power. Because when you've truly got power, you know, you don't need to do any of that stuff. And then, and so between Cree and Andrea, I mean, I really feel like parts of my soul as an actor have grown.
That's great.
So that guidance that you got from Andrea Romano made all the difference for this first season for you?
It certainly helped. You know, I mean, I certainly had a way that I was doing it, a thing that I was doing that got me hired. And then as a team, we kind of honed it, you know, someplace just slightly different. But, you know, I worked with her on this and I worked with her on StarCraft too. And, you know, it's a joy. It's a pleasure. I mean, she knows how to talk to actors in a language that they understand, as opposed to giving line readings or telling you how it should sound or anything like that. She helps you get to a place where you feel it. And when you feel it, you perform it, you give it, you that know, and mm-hmm. as opposed to working with her on a video game where it's just she and I, you know, working with her on this with a whole cast, I also get to sit back and watch her guide other actors through their performances. And it's another opportunity for me to sit back and learn and grow. I think we put together a pretty good character.
Yes, you did. Yes, you Indeed. Did. And we're going to come to our final fan question now.
All righty.
Seamus Kelly. Who is the ultimate space dad, Zarkon or Shiro?
See, this is where I'm going to get into a lot of trouble, okay? Because, you know, it's like I jump into these things sometimes not knowing what kind of pool of piranha I'm actually swimming in, you know?
But you know this time.
No, I don't, because I don't exactly know what y'all mean by the space dad. I'm going to go with Shiro because Josh seems far more willing to take the role. You know, Josh seems perfectly okay with it, and he's got actual kids of his own, you know, and he seems ready for it. Me, you know, I mean, my wife and I don't have any kids yet, still kind of hoping, but So maybe Josh is better equipped, and maybe I'm more like the space uncle, okay? I spoil the kids, I have fun with them, and then I give them back.
Yeah.
That's, you know, awesome. And I think you could see that in how I behave on Twitter. I kind of get the people riled up, and then I disappear for a little while.
That's right.
You know, nice. You know, and it's like I'm just to ruin a few people, a few misconceptions out there. I only wrote something about Sheath because it sounded neat. You know, wow. I had no idea what can of worms I opened up there. You know, but the kids are having fun with it, so okay.
Has there anything that you've shared with the fans gotten a life of its own, I guess, is what I want to ask.
Oh, I think that did.
Okay.
I think that did. But, you know, as I said, look, you know, I mean, somebody asked me what I thought about fan fiction. And it's kind of hard to get into on Twitter. But ultimately, as long as it doesn't inhibit your ability to like what the creators are actually giving you, then I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as you're having fun, but you're still engaging with the original, you know, I think fan fiction becomes a problem when people, like, I don't know, try to mutiny, you know,
right.
Try to tell George Lucas when he was in charge of Star Wars, no, this is what we want from the movies. What this person wrote on this website, this one day, it's like, it's his story. You want to do the fan fiction thing? Have a good time. Don't hurt anybody. Please, you know, let's keep it within reasonable bounds, you know, which I know a lot of people don't. And then in which case, then if you're unreasonably bound, then at least be unreasonably bound within a reasonable community. Okay.
Right.
Or a reasonable amount of people. It's like, but ultimately, you know, is fan fiction any different, really, than when I used to be a kid and I would go and play Batman in the park?
No.
I mean, technically, when I would play with my Mego action figures, or I would put on my bat cape and go play Batman, nobody gave me the script from the 66 series, so obviously I was creating in the moment.
You made it up as you went along.
So how is pretending or playing, how is that ultimately different than fan fiction? It's just expressing your fandom and your creativity in a new way. And if it comes from a place of love and appreciation, and it doesn't interfere with your ability to like the official one, I'm all for it, you know?
How about it?
Right. Well, I think that's a great way to end this, too. So I want to thank you for joining us today. This has been a great conversation about Zarkon, Voltron, everything, your whole life as a voice actor, everything you've done. This is terrific. So thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome, and I look forward to coming back and reviewing an episode with you guys.
Sounds
great.
Yeah,
that would be totally great if you could come back and help us review Black Paladin.
That sounds good to me. If everybody can still tolerate me after this episode, I'm all for it.
Great. I think we can.
Yeah, and I think everybody's going to enjoy this. So
all right.
Thank you for taking your time. I know your time is precious and everything, and you've already been through a lot today. So thank you very much for this.
You're welcome, guys. Have a good night.
Okay, Greg, so how about that interview with Neil Kaplan? Wasn't he a great guest?
Oh my gosh, yes. And it was fun to hear him exercising his vocal cords in various ways and dropping pop culture references that I both got and completely missed.
Yeah, I mean, his range of references is almost Dennis Miller-like, if you ask me.
Yeah, actually, I was reminded a little bit of Neil Ross from when you had interviewed him some time ago, and he talked about people with elastic voices, and certainly Neil Kaplan has a voice that falls into that descriptor. Wow, what a lot of fun to hear.
Right, when he was describing the part where they had found out that he had gotten the voice of Optimus Prime, and they had only remembered his Digimon character, you know, it was just kind of funny the way he had brought that all out.
I actually would now love to see a remade Tootsie Roll Pop commercial with him doing Mr. Owl, because that was a riot.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, these are the types of things, you know, voice actors, you know, they're serious and they, you know, they love their character and everything, but you can tell that there are voice actors that sort of started as comedians almost.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And in school that they were always imitating people, but practicing their craft at the time, basically, so that when they got older, they could actually turn it into something that is a job.
Right.
So I've heard this kind of story from a lot of people, you know, a lot of different voice actors who were saying, you know, I was the kid in school making jokes all the time and imitating people and imitating other voices that they heard. And then maybe they got involved in radio or something like that, you know, and maybe they got a few small local spots on maybe an ad or something like that. And then they jumped into somehow, you know, through an agent or something like that, they got into auditioning for animation. So this is pretty cool stuff when you get somebody who's just willing to, you know, do it all.
Yep.
In the course of an interview.
Yes, indeed.
So he's definitely a fan favorite. We already know that from Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
But if you'd like to, you know, follow him and you don't already do it, it's @kneecap. And that's a joke in itself.
Yes, it is. Except in this case, it would be NEKAP. But yes, great stuff.
Yes, I know. It's funny because I was looking at his interactions with people on Twitter, and one of his fans actually got the joke for the first time, his Twitter name joke, Kneecap.
Okay, I'm gonna admit something. It didn't occur to me. I never read his name out loud until I heard you just now, and I thought, oh, crap. I didn't get it either until now.
So that's @NEKAP. So follow him on Twitter. You'll enjoy yourself immensely.
Yes, and I need to, I have to promote my own Twitter account, if you don't mind, since it is different
sure.
than yours.
Sure.
Let's Voltron is indeed the official account for the podcast. I'm also out there in the Twitterverse at Let's Voltron Greg. So if you'd like to, you know, send me a tweet or whatever, feel free.
Yeah, thank you for that. And yeah. Also, you know, there's a million ways to see us, you know, not just on this podcast, but you know, it's obviously letsvoltron.com.
Yep.
We have @letsvoltron on Twitter. We have Let's Voltron podcast on Facebook.
Yep.
We are Let's Voltron on both Pinterest and Instagram.
Indeed.
And this is something that a lot of people don't remember a whole lot, but we also have an email address, letsvoltronpodcast@gmail.com.
I use it quite a bit myself to reach Mark, so I know right. It works, guys.
And if you send us an email, and you can comment about anything, we might read your email on the podcast.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you'll be signing up with our newsletter, which is coming soon. We're building a newsletter, and we have to build a mailing list first.
Yes.
So, send us an email, letsvoltronpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget, we also have a YouTube channel.
Indeed.
So Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, is also on YouTube.
Exciting stuff.
So if there's any videos that I'm going to get from San Diego, we will be sharing them on the podcast YouTube channel.
Great. Loving it. Looking forward to it. I will not be at San Diego Comic-Con, but I definitely look forward, as our listeners do, to whatever you see and hear out there, Mark.
Well, as the time of this recording, it's less than 2 weeks away.
Exciting. Looking forward to it. And I am so stoked about that Bandai Soul of Chogokin Golion Voltron. Holy moly.
Yes. Yes, I will get lots of pictures of that.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us for this week. We'll have another exciting one with you next time. Do we want to tell them?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. Well, let's tell them. Wow. I can actually tell you about the next two podcasts.
What? It's like you're in a time machine.
Yes, this is amazing. We've actually been able to get some scheduling lined up ahead of time here.
Holy moly.
All right. Well, before, you know, I go to San Diego Comic-Con, wanted to try to get as many interviews as we could before we go. So we have Lauren Montgomery and Joaquin Dos Santos coming back again, this time for an extended period of time.
Wonderful.
And we're actually going to get to talk to them at length.
That would be fun. And this will be my first time chatting with them. So very cool.
Yes, finally.
I know. Third time's the charm.
They wanted to make sure that you did like them.
Yeah. Oh, I do. And the funny thing was, fellow listeners out there, that Mark emailed me that information and said, you really need to be on this. I'm like, yes, I do.
And then our next podcast after that is going to include Kimberly Brooks.
Very, very cool.
Kimberly Brooks, as everyone knows, plays Princess Allura.
Yes, very cool. This is going to be so much fun. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, if you listen to the end of the podcast, you get to hear what comes next. We have a lot of work to do, obviously, so let's get to it. And we'll see you all next time on...
Let's Voltron!